I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
According to some scientists, the amount of data that the average person consumes is somewhere on the order of 74.5 gigabytes of information. That's about as much as watching 16 movies through TV, computers, cell phones, tablets, billboards, and many other gadgets. And that's approximately 666 minutes per day or 11.1 hours. That's a lot of consuming information. And yet, when you think about it, the number that we just had is many, many times higher when you consider all of the information that's coming at us. We mostly reject a lot of data only to choose the things that we want to pay attention to and consume. Ergo, we are in an attention economy, and authenticity is the currency. We pay attention, we consume, we listen, we read to those things that align with our values and our interests, and anything else we don't pay attention to at all. But my next guest on the Business of Intuition really is a master and a thought leader in the whole area of authenticity and branding, and certainly how culture plays a part of those too. Parham Albadvi is a trailblazing copywriter and business strategist for conscious businesses. He is the founder of Mocha & Co., a creative and consulting studio serving exclusively conscious businesses and disruptors. Together with his partner, he helps bold business leaders bring new ideas to market and to build value through his process. After a stint working for various innovative SaaS companies, he took the plunge to work as a freelance copywriter and business strategist while traveling the world. He's also committed to helping businesses of all sizes realize what Fred Kaufman's vision of business is: to be conscious of inner and outer worlds, taking into account the mind, the body, the spirit, the self, the culture, and nature. Perfect timing in the world in which we live right now. Parham Albadvi on the Business of Intuition. So I was thinking prior to our conversation, Parham, about the last time I saw live theater. And I think it was probably right before the pandemic. I was in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I had some time to kill. And there's this world-class, internationally known theater there called the Guthrie Theater. And I remember just having a great time watching and being in the audience for, I think it was Cyrano de Bergerac. But what it made me think about was how different the audience perspective of something live is when you look at film versus theater, when it's a live situation. Because in film, your eyes kind of tell you where to go. But in live theater, your eyes can go wherever it wants to go. You can look at the person who has no lines, or you can look at the person who has all the lines. You know, your eyes go where it wants to go. And so it reminded me of something that I had heard, and I do believe is true, that when we are in the presence of something that's really authentic, we cannot help but pay attention to it. That's why babies and dogs are such great salespeople in commercials, is because they're so authentic. We want to look at them because they represent a part of us that maybe we have lost touch with, that authenticity, that being in the present moment. And in theater, I notice when I'm watching actors on the stage, I always go to the person without even realizing it, who seems most authentic, whether they have lines to say or not. And so as a lead into our conversation, I was thinking about this and you and your work around authenticity and branding. Tell us a little bit about why authenticity right now is so important in messaging and branding, because it seems to be something we hear all the time. Why now? What's going on that we need authentic messages, authentic brands?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. I would say the number one factor that's really contributing to the importance of authenticity and branding is due to the fact that the next generation of buyers are becoming more and more value driven. We're moving from a benefits feature world of benefits and features to who are you and why is this important? And due to the information age, it's really easy to distinguish brands who are putting perhaps a facade on or brands who are actually practicing their values and infusing each part of their strategy with their values. So the brands that are doing this, for instance, like brands like Patagonia, who do this really well. People might not think of Ben and Jerry, for instance, look at them as just an ice cream brand, but actually their values are very imbued. And once you eat Ben and Jerry's, it's something more than just an ice cream. You're actually experiencing something that's contributing to not only their bottom line, but their purpose, the way they operate, their culture. So I think that's what's really leading to brands understanding authenticity and really having measurements in place to see how they can be more authentic and how that's related to their growth and profits at the same time as well.
So are younger people better bullshit detectors than those who are in the baby boomer generation?
That's a funny question. I don't think that's the case here. I just think that with the information age, really, we're having access to a sea of information and knowledge just through having access to our phones in our hands. And with kids right now, it's embedded in our society. So we see our parents on their phones, so they get to see what a phone is like. So, I mean, I'm not encouraging kids to get on their phones, but I do think that it's like ingrained in our daily lives in a way. We and technology are also part of nature at this point. So I would say that, yes, in a way, the next generation, because of their access to knowledge, they're able to really detect bullshit, as you put it, more accurately.
but and I know, without getting too far down the road of using swear words, but I think the theme here that I'm trying to follow with you on, based on what you said earlier, is that if these younger people who were born into cell phones, whereas you and I'm not sure how old you are, but certainly with me, I remember when cell phones started, and they started in your car. You had this little suitcase that you would carry around, you know, and you had a separate, it was a big deal to have a phone that was like the size of a football, you know, it was huge. I remember those days, but nonetheless, now that we have these cell phones and we have Google, who will get back to us within 0.0002 seconds with the request that we have, it seems to me that we are training our expectations around human interaction to be as fast as the expectations we have for our phones and Google. Meaning, I now want you to get back to me really fast because I've been so used to that with my phones getting back to me with the answer of, where's the closest Starbucks? And so that's why I'm wondering, is that compression of time, that compression of expectations, is that then causing the sender of the message to be so good about what it is that they're saying, being so authentic that they stand out in a short amount of time? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great angle for sure. I would say that because we have access to technology, we're also seeing a growth of saturation in spaces where people are just like jumping on bandwagons when the new trend comes in. Brands just want to say they're part of that trend. But at the end of the day, I think our foundational values as a brand and the story that we tell to our audience as to why we do what we do really is our differentiating factor. It's our biggest differentiating factor in a world of just pay-per-clicks and just like clickbait advertisements. So I really think that brands that are the most authentic and build community from within are the ones that are able to sustainably grow and stay relevant in the long term.
And so it goes back to authenticity is attractive, is what I'm assuming that you're saying. We are attracted, back to my analogy around, I'm in a theater, I'm in the audience, I'm looking at my actors out there on the stage, I'm going to go to those who seem authentic just because it looks more interesting. And it sounds like what you're saying is the same is true for brands. Those that seem more authentic, we're attracted to the, versus those that are not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that initially when we all start doing something and when we put ourselves out there, the most authentic version of ourselves, or even just putting ourselves out there and putting ourselves on a limb, introducing ourselves, telling people or in our audience why we do what we do and why it's really important. Like the clients that I work with, for instance, I worked with Heather Ivany, who's the yoga and spiritual mentor. I saw that you've actually interviewed her earlier.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And yeah, we've worked extensively together as well, Heather and I, and just seeing how authentic she is and what she does and how it's her values are really infused in all her programs was really empowering. And that's really why I do what I do. I really love working with creators and helping them amplify their impact and income at the same time. And I do that through copywriting. Myself took that plunge out in 2020 when the pandemic happened. I had always wanted to go independent and do work with brands on like an international scale. But I started small. I started with just doing like freelancing here and there. I just wanted to see how it will work. But after doing copywriting for 6 months and really seeing the impact that the clients are seeing in their bottom line and their lifestyle, Heather herself, she has 3 children, and seeing the work that we've done for her really come into fruition and how that's really impacted just her relationship with time with her family is really empowering. And that's why I love to do what I do.
It seems to me that when you go down the path of authenticity in messaging, you have to do a deep dive into what you value, what you want, who you're about. And in so doing, you also must define what you're not about, what we're not going to do, who we're not going to work with. Are you finding that the clients you work with sometimes struggle with this authenticity path that you are taking them down because they're afraid that they're going to lose people? Because in the past, they tried to be all things to too many people, that being more narrow in focus, which is authentic, I'm sure, means that some people I'm just not going to work with. Yeah, how do you help them through that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great, great point, Dean. And I think that my own business, Mocho & Co., we're a copywriting agency. And we just recently, we were a copywriting agency for conscious businesses, helping conscious businesses in the space to grow their authority and profits. But recently, we got a lot of interest when we were doing our copywriting for design work as well. And we saw it coming, like we would write landing page or sales page copy and people would come to us and be like, well, do you know any designers? Do you think you can do this for us? And sometimes we took it on, but we felt like we were overextending ourselves when we did that and we weren't being specialized. So we felt like if we had focused solely on copywriting, which is where our clients are seeing the most return on investment, we would actually be able to be the best copywriting agency for brands who are uplifting consciousness, elevating consciousness and wellness, and stay relevant in the next 10 years. But if we become everything for everyone, then we basically become, we don't stand for specialization. And the way I look at it really is, right now you see a Formula One race, right? When the car is driving and comes to a halt, you see someone changing the tire, someone jumping on the engine, making sure that everything's in place. Each person is specialized in making sure that this car and this driver in the car is ready to go full speed ahead and that nothing's going to happen to them. So I think brands are seeing that they need people who are specialized and they're not everything for everyone. And we're seeing brands who did that really. The great example, I think the most infamous one is Trump, right? Trump doesn't stand for a hotel, what does it stand for? Is it a hotel, a casino? Is it a shopping mall? Is it a president? There's so many brand lines that I feel like that shows why the Trump brand itself is in debt for billions or millions of dollars, apparently. But yeah, brands that are even smaller that do that, like IBM. IBM wanted to become like owning every software in the cyberspace, but now they become less and less relevant. So they're like, okay, maybe we should specialize more. So brands really pay a big price. And though that's in the 22 Laws of Marketing by Al Reese, that's a great book and talking about how brands should stay specialized and really focus on what they do best.
That's great. Yeah. So you're bumping up against obviously fear, with some people, some organizations, why being specialized, I can see that. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, so when I do, say, a strategic plan, I'm always balancing the planning piece with the team development piece. We can create a great five-year vision and create strategies to fulfill against that and goals to be able to support those strategies. But if we're not the right team to be able to live into those strategies, it'll be just a piece of paper with no meaning. So I'm always trying to find ways to support the development of the team that then can manage and live into those strategies. And so my question is, how do you help a team get to their own authenticity as people within that team ecosystem so that then the brand is a natural extension of that inner authenticity? Meaning, like, how far back do you go, you know, as a copywriter, as a brander? Do you go all the way back to the individual and help them determine what their authenticity is so that it expresses through the brand?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that the brands and the creators, the people that we work with, our clients are typically really authentic people. Their brands have already, like, I'm a strategic maximizer. I like to work with great brands and make them even better. So that's how I like to focus my business on. So I like to work with brands who are already coming from like a place of good, like they're looking at it from a place of community. And they typically are a small, intimate team, but they have a brand with lots of potential. And I can really recognize that potential by just having a quick look at the founder, their story, what they're really putting out there. And just by a quick conversation, we can really establish whether or not it's a good fit. So for me, it's really organically, I like to be connected with people who want to stay relevant in the long term. They're not just in it for the short term. They're not looking for like short wins. They want to win consistently. And I love just working with founders who see that potential, and I can just help them put the right systems in place and make sure that the strategy in place is really corresponding to their quarterly goals and their long-term goals.
So can you tell, without getting into the inner workings of a team or a company, from just a consumer perspective, which brands are authentic, which ones are not? And if so, do you have an example of a company that maybe most of us would know, and we would say, well, this is an authentic brand? And could you, if you have the example, why do you think that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that in this world, we all gravitate towards brands that really have similar values as us. So it's really challenging to name like a global brand that everyone would potentially like. But for instance, I just recently spoke to a founder at Rainbow. They do adaptogens. They do tinctures like lion's mane and cordyceps. The packaging is beautiful, and they have a really great influencer program where they're just teaming up with community leaders and ensuring that they're using it and talking about it if they enjoy it. But overall, like, the founder is deeply ingrained in the product development, to the community, to the hiring. She loves it. She lives fungi and mushrooms. She really lives lifestyle, and she really is really involved in each step of the product development, ensuring that her closest circle of experts that are using products similar to this are giving her like feedback. So seeing someone like her, she doesn't have a global brand by any means at this point. It's like focused on North America. But I do see her, for instance, in the next 5 to 10 years, really being at a place where she has a global brand and she's really leading in the niche of adaptogens and alternative medicine. So we're really seeing it in our corners of the neighborhood, really just people with big dreams and with the idea that they can do it. They can really put out something that they love, something that they live day to day, that they've seen improve their own lives out there. And yeah, it does take definitely planning and strategy and all of that. But really, I think the brands that are doing super well are the ones who are just doing and getting feedback as they're doing. And taking step back, of course, here and there, but at the same point, I think doing is more important than strategy. And that's where we see a lot of brands fail.
So if you have an authentic brand, would it be fair to say that your consumer or the community, there may be some members within the community that might say, this aligns with me, ergo, I feel like it's authentic. I connect with it. It shares my values. I feel a part of this. Whereas somebody else, a neighbor, may say, I'm also a seeker of authentic brands. This particular company that you felt was authentic, I don't align with. Can it be that authenticity is in the eyes of the consumer as much as it is in the eyes of the team that's developing the brand?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that we see that with brands that are authentically putting themselves out there. Sometimes there's certain people that say, hey, well, I still don't really, I don't want to pay a price for authenticity. Like sometimes these brands like Patagonia, for instance, they do great quality things, but some people claim that it's expensive, that it's still not enough for them to purchase it. And maybe Patagonia doesn't target those people. They are not in their ideal market. And that's okay.
Right.
Seth Godin really talks about that. He says, if you find your 1,000 raving fans, then you will have no problem with marketing because you can just like bring out new products from an authentic place. Obviously, like work as hard on the product side of things and listen to your audience, but those 1,000 true raving fans will just spread the word for you. And we see that with Apple, of course, is like the famous example. When a new product comes in, everyone's lining up by their stores, yeah, no matter what the product is. I do think that smaller brands are also really developing that relationship with their audience right now. So it's already happening. And the brands that really are listening or on the pulse of what their audience really wants, and also at the same time being innovative and not always listening to what their audience is saying. Because, you know, the famous saying of Henry Ford is, if I had asked what people wanted, they would have said faster horses. So sometimes
that's a great, I remember that quote. That's awesome. Right.
So innovation is really coming into play right now. And the brands that are able to take those risks and innovate and sometimes take what their audience is saying with a grain of salt are able to really develop those innovative products as well.
Push back on your Henry Ford quote, which I love that. I remember that from before. People don't necessarily need faster horses. There's another value that they need that the faster horses will help them get to. Am I correct in that, in your thoughts? Like faster horse is just a tool to jump to something else. So it's about transportation. It's about
saving time.
It's saving time. It's about the journey of the travel, you know, on my horse, but the horse is not the destination. The horse is the vehicle to help us get there. And so maybe that's part of the authentic soup is leading from the end goal in mind and working backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at the end goal and working backwards really is. And I think that some brands really did that innovatively. And initially, the feedback they got wasn't that positive. Like a famous example is Airbnb. Like 20 years ago, if you had told someone that, hey, you can just rent out your place when you're not here and you can have a bunch of strangers sleep at your place, like people think you'll be crazy. You'd be crazy.
You're right. And
initially, they did that with like a conference. I remember the story of Brian Chesky as there was a conference, and then that's why like all the hotels were sold out. So they were like, all right, well, let's just try this out. And it worked. It worked really well. And they did like a bed and breakfast style experience for the guests. And they went to the conference and came back. And that was like a good initial feedback. But at the end of the day, what they did was really unordinary. It wasn't really something that was the thing to do back then. And a lot of brands that have that potential, like I mentioned, the adaptogen brand like Rainbow, it might seem crazy to some people, but I do think that like her medicine could potentially be prescribed instead of some of the stuff that we're doing right now with our modern medicine, but it's not happening. So I do think in the next 10, 15 years, as more people are gravitated toward natural medicine, she might really grow to be one of the leading brands and globally. So who knows? But I do think that the space is changing and a lot of things are coming. A lot of brands that are authentic are able to really grow exponentially in this space.
So you're making me think. The thing I'm wondering about now, I'm trying to find a way of articulating this, is that it seems that innovation sometimes often happens to create some sort of new feature, new technology that we as a consumer didn't know we needed. We didn't know that we needed cars. We thought we just needed a faster horse. We didn't know that we needed to, you know, rent out space in people's houses. We just wanted more hotel rooms, right? So those are features, those are functions, but there's still that larger goal that makes us want to use that feature function to get to. And I guess what I'm saying is that people don't always know what they want, but the company can help us provide the thing that we didn't know that we wanted. You know, we didn't know we needed a camera on a phone. Now we have it almost to the point where it's ubiquitous. It's expected. So then my question then is, what's the difference between a feature and a brand? Mm-hmm. How would you define the two?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that a brand really, like a feature is part of a brand, but it's like a brand is a lot more than that. A brand starts from the founder's initial problem and how they initially tackled it. For instance, the Brian Chesky story that we just spoke about, I think Brian himself like really went through Rhode Island. Of course, he graduated from Rhode Island. Like he had an initial experience in design, and he approached problems from a design thinking perspective. And he saw an issue with like place hotels being sold out and people wanting to come to the conference and literally not having any place to stay. That was a problem then. So experiencing that and approaching it from like a minimum viable product, which is essentially just like something that you can put out there that can generate income that people are willing to pay for, but it's like not the fully optimized version of your product. It's like your V1, essentially, V1 of your website. But yeah, I mean, like what they did really started very organically. It started from the ground up, and it started from a problem that they had experienced themselves. But I think a brand really takes that and makes sure that the customer experience of solving that problem is seamless. And that's what Airbnb has done, really. You can book any place in the world right now in a matter of minutes. And that's just incredible, the growth that we've seen in that space right now.
Try this on. Got it. Culture is how things get done, fueled by vision, values, and behaviors. Just try that. If you agree with some aspect of that, it's also the feeling that you get in being to experience a company. Is a brand equal to the culture expressed to the community? Like it's like the culture of a company that gets expressed to the community, is in a sense the brand of the company?
Yeah, I love that. I love that so much. And I would say that the culture is really where is the foundation or the building blocks. It's like, it's what's holding the entire practices and the approaches of the business, of the brand itself. So I really see the brand being like an overarching umbrella that contains your brand story, that contains your culture, that contains all your assets and the way that you communicate. It also contains like the way that your employees are viewing the business and how they actually interact with your business. And I see that as them being like participants in the business and the strategy. It's no longer like a top bottom approach. It's really spread out and everyone gets to have a say.
So the reason why I'm asking this question about culture and its relationship to brand is that it seems, at least in our work, as we do work with companies around culture, which is a very inside out approach, it seems more and more that this sort of process then gets handed off or includes the marketing department. And then they take all of that cultural artifact and clarity and move it into social media, colors, logos, the way we communicate with our customers, ultimately, I suppose, even some of the features and some of the functions of some of the things in which we do. So I know that there's been always sort of this connection, but I think this conversation, at least for me, has helped sort of clarify that.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why when we initially work with brands, we send in a brand questionnaire. Like it definitely doesn't do justice in terms of understanding everything there is to know about their brand, but it gives us a glimpse of their brand values. What are some of the challenges that they face? What are their goals this quarter? These just little things really make a big difference once we're designing a campaign or writing copy for like an email sequence for them to ensure that they're getting customer retention in place, their bounce rates are down. Those stats are like really things that we can focus on and ensure that their brand is staying healthy across all the ecosystem, the digital ecosystem. I love the idea of cultural artifacts and bringing clarity to that and starting inside out. I think that's really powerful. And that's the process that we're building right now. We get the information in, then we follow like an RMBC method, which is taught by Stefan Georgi. He's one of the top copywriters in the direct-to-consumer space, which is research, mechanism, brief, and then copy, the actual copy. So we go through that process to ensure that we understand what the space looks like. For instance, if there's other brands out there, what are the 5-star ratings and what are the 1-star ratings? What are people raving about? And what is like some of the problems that they're facing? So we can get insights by just zooming out and understanding what people are already saying out there. And that wasn't really accessible to us decades ago. We couldn't just go listen to what our audience are saying like that. But with technology, really with information technology right now, especially, we're getting access to that ecosystem. We're getting access to direct feedback from our users and our audience in terms of how their experience is. And I think brand is what your audience says, not what you say also. So that's what really is creating that elevation of brand, because the people who are listening what their audience is saying.
Yeah, you're talking like almost like the voice of the customer, those surveys and those metrics that we have to be able to understand what's the customer experience. And I think companies are getting better at this. I still think there's a long way to go to be able to map customer experience data with internal employee engagement surveys, so that we see that it will increase on one side as so it will on the other, that they are related, they are synergistically connected, that we can't provide something to our customer that we ourselves are not a product of that product. I can't be about great service, however we define that, and then treat my coworkers like crap. You know, those things don't align, and therefore, ergo, is not authentic. And maybe some of those younger, generation people would smell bullshit because the words sound right, but the behavior behind it doesn't. Like anybody who goes on a plane, anybody that interacts with a call center knows what I'm talking about. We might have these values that we propose as who we are, but if we don't have behavior to back it up, we smell a rat.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that right now with the pandemic that happened in 2020, I think it really accelerated people to stop and think whether they really want to be where they are for the next 2, 3, or 5, or even 10 years. So it really, I think it was like a great awakening for a lot of people in terms of whether or not the lifestyle that they're living is really a fit for their mind, body, and soul. Right. Which often gets forgotten. So a big lesson for me is like, there's no ideal timing for anything really. So I think that the brands that understand that like the landscape is constantly changing and are ready to adapt to that are the ones that are able to thrive in the long term.
So what is your brand?
That's a great question. So I work with my own brand, Follow Your Why, on Instagram. So that's mostly my own personal brand that I've just posted things that I love while traveling. And it just started to grow organically in terms of like the new places that I go, the cultural distinctions that I see in the world, and just people watching and taking photos and all that. And so I built my own brand, Follow Your Why, just organically by posting things that I love, things that resonate with me, lifestyle hacks, for instance. And then now I'm focusing on Mochu & Co., which is our copywriting agency, and we focus on helping brands that elevate consciousness and wellness. So the Mochu & Co. brand is really dedicated to helping these leaders bring their authentic brands to the world at a really higher frequency and able to scale really sustainably at the same time, to be able to not only just grow their profits, but at the same time, make sure that their team is also growing in congruency with the sales of their product, that their team is growing with them, the community is growing with them. So that's been really empowering to the work that I do. I just love working with brands that are already really amazing and empowering in their work, and just helping that scale that organically and sustainably through copywriting.
And my
podcast. Sorry about that. And the third brand is the Juya podcast that's coming into birth, but it's right. Like new.
can't wait to hear that one. So last question I want to ask you, and how do you want people to feel after interacting with you or your company?
I want them to really feel empowered to go on their path to live their biggest potential. I want them to dream big, really. Whenever I get on a call with a potential client or an existing client, I really ask questions like, if you had a magic wand and you could just wave it around, what would you like to see happen in your business? And when they respond to me, it's always so empowering to see that it's always coming from a place of authenticity, coming from a place of love, coming from a place of growing their community and ensuring that their community is rising with them, with the growth of their brand and product and with their profits at the same time. So yeah, that's what really inspires me to do what I do.
Well, Parham, you're just a great, I mean, I will say this without meaning it anything other than what it is, very authentic, sincere, courageous, inquisitive, loving guy. I mean, you just, you exude that. Hopefully people, as they listen to you on this podcast, they get that. I certainly get that in seeing you in my little 2x2 box. We've not met before other than the one time that we talked a couple months ago when we had some technical issues, but I really wish you the best. You're just doing some great work. And I think the world needs more people like you to help us find our voice in an authentic way and be thought leaders for our industry and to, you know, be a part of the solution moving forward. So thank you so much for being here. How can people connect to you? You mentioned the podcast that's coming up. Just one more quick time on any other resources that people can know about in terms of knowing about you and your work.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Dini. I really enjoyed this conversation as well. Lovely to jump in and talk to you about this, and love the work that you're doing with the Mission Facilitators. The best way to connect with me is at Follow Your Why. That's just my own personal Instagram, and everything you sent to me there, I will read it for sure. And then, yeah, the rest of the Mochu & Co. and the Juya podcast is on there as well in my bio. So if anyone wants to learn more about our podcast, it's there, and also Mochu & Co., our copywriting agency.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. It's been great.
Thank you, Dean. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.